Well, good afternoon. We want to welcome you to Impact, the Bible and Current Events. Impact, the Bible and Current Events. I want to thank all of you who've been writing to us or emailing or phoning and for thanking us for what we're doing on this broadcast. We're trying to connect spiritual and biblical issues to current events. What's going on in America? Well, folks, it's not going very good in America. It's not going very good, and we have a time of voting coming up, and it's not going very good. I hope that you go to the polls. This is Monday evening for October the 11th, and we want to thank you for joining us on this day as we study these great issues. Hey, we have a free book for you. You know what? We're being blessed to give away to you a book that costs is retailed at about $15 to $17. Hardback book. You've never seen a more beautiful cover. It is your book. It's for you absolutely free. No strings attached. 165 pages. Hardback. And I want to give you the phone number to call. Give us your name and address clearly so that we can get this book to you as fast as we can. And by the way, at the Clifton Bible Church, we've had about 15 people read this book through. Some read it in one setting because they said, this book has got to be out for people. This book is a must. This book is a must for people who are concerned about America. And the book is yours. The title is America, Founded as a Christian Nation? America, was it founded as a Christian nation? And by the way, when you call, be sure and give us just the one word for the book title, America. That'll tell us that will tell us which book that you're after. America. That's all you need to say. America. Here's the phone number, 254-675-2681. 254-675-2681. One more time. 254-675-2681. By the way, I just glanced down. I'm recording this at my Hill Country office, and you all see my desk. It's terribly, terribly disheveled. My desk looks awful. You can't even see the bottom of it. I'm generally a pretty organized guy, but not my desk, because I have notes here on my desk that I have to use. And guess what? I just glanced down by the recorder, and guess what is sitting right here in front of me on my desk? Two books, right under my nose. If I bend down, my nose will touch both of these books. One, my Bible, and number two, a copy of the Declaration of Independence and the Constitution. The Declaration of Independence and the Constitution is right under my nose, and I'd forgotten how to lay it right here as one of the top books on my desk. You know, I live out to the Hill Country, just outside of Clifton, Texas, and I see cows and I see rabbits and beautiful, beautiful world that God has given us. And we just had a few trees when we came here 14 years ago, but my wife has planted all kinds of trees and bushes and fruit trees. And we have an acre and a half, and we think we're gentlemen farmers. We love our little acre and a half. But if you were driving by my house about a few weeks ago, you would have heard me screaming and yelling. And my house is about 100, 150 yards from the road. You would hear me, you have heard me crying. Because in the morning, I watch the news on television. And I'm getting ready to turn the program off, the television's off. And I just happened to just flip the dial and caught an old 1943 movie on television. And just as I caught that movie, and I didn't watch all of it because I've seen it before, but just as I caught it, by the way, I only watch two things on television, documentaries and old movies. That's all I watch. I can't stand the other junk that's on television. But anyway, I flipped over and caught this 1943 movie. Just as Kate Smith, some of you didn't have no idea who Kate Smith was. She was a great singer during World War II. Kate Smith stepped forward and she began to sing, God Bless America. In this old movie, there's a patriotic movie concerning World War II. And Kate Smith began to sing, God Bless America. God Bless America. Beautiful song. And I began to just bawl like a baby. I began to cry so hard my wife thought I was sick. I couldn't help it. God Bless America. Now, you know, that history, by the way, she made it famous, and that song made her famous. And in fact, people from that point forward to about the last 20 years always knew about God Bless America. Could that be sung today? Could it be sung in school? Could it be sung at some public event? Probably not. Probably not. Well, you know the story of the song? It was written by Irving Berlin in World War One. In World War One, about 20 some odd years before Kate Smith sang it in 1943. And Irving Berlin, he either did or did not even have it sung publicly one time, but whatever, he didn't like it. He didn't like the song he wrote. And he was a Jew from Europe, and he had a great appreciation for this nation, so he wrote, God Bless America. But he didn't like it, and he put the song in the drawer, his desk drawer, and it never came out again until World War II began. Until World War II began. And he said, you know, I know who needs to sing this. Kate Smith. And Kate Smith sang that in this movie. And I began to cry like a baby. We've lost the nation. We have certainly lost the thought that God blessed America. We have lost the... Do our kids know that? Do our kids understand that? No. Some of you who are older do. You get the point. You remember the song. But so many do not. And so many have no idea what that's about. Hey, if you want this book, America, Founded as a Christian Nation? It's yours free. I'm going to give you the phone number one more time, 254-675-2681. Give us your name and address clearly. The book is yours. It's on the way to you. And you will greatly, greatly appreciate the book as we face voting next month, okay? As we face the issue of voting, and you need to make sure you know who you're going to vote for. Maybe God will bless us and turn this nation around. Maybe. Well, we've been looking at Christianity in public schools. And over again, we have read statements last week where people in the know, people involved in education, said America was founded as a Christian nation. And I was reading some quotes from a book entitled A Patriot's History of the United States. I want to pick up and read some more from that book. Here's what that book says, quote, consequently, America, while attaching itself to no specific denomination of Christianity, operated on an understanding that the nation would adopt an unofficial generic Christianity that fit hand in glove with republicanism. The French author, Tocqueville, I'm sure I didn't pronounce that right, came to America, and he wrote a book about America entitled Democracy in America, 1835. Now, here's what this French author observed when he came and visited America. He observed that in the United States, the spirit of Christianity and the spirit of freedom were intimately united, and that they reigned in common over the same country. Certain fundamentals seem unanimously agreed upon. And that would be posting of the Ten Commandments in public places was appropriate. Prayers in virtually all official and public functions were expected. America was particularly blessed because of her trust in God. Now, this is what this French writer was observing. And even when individuals in civil life did not ascribe to a specific denomination, they were expected to act like good Christians and conduct themselves as would a believer. Politicians like George Washington walked a fine line between maintaining the secular form and yet supplying the necessary spiritual substance to this country. In part, this explains why so many of the early writings and speeches of the founders were both timeless and uplifting. Their message of spiritual virtue, cloaked in republican processes of civil duty, reflected a sense of providential mission for the young country, America. That's what is written in that book about American history. These facts were passed on. Now this is my statement. These facts were passed on to the next generation in the public schools with no objection from the parents. all the way through the 1950s, the parents did not object when Christian expression was made in the public schools. I know, I was in public schools in the 1950s. And we had Easter programs in school. We had Christmas programs in school. No parent objected. My closest friend was a Jewish brother, a Jewish friend of my friend. He and I were classmates in grade school and junior high and high school. And it was a great privilege to have him as my friend. He didn't object to the Christian expressions in America. Neither did his parents. Well, can you believe that Christianity was being expressed in the public schools, and yet they were tax-supported early schools? How would America guarantee that its new government would operate by Christian principles? By supporting the school systems and inculcating in the next generation Christian ideals. Going back to 1639, the town of Dorchester provided for a school by means of a tax laid upon the holders of property. What were called then wardens, we would call them today supervisors, wardens were elected to make certain that the, quote, charge and oversight and ordering, end quote, of all the affairs of the schools were giving forth Christian principles in the curriculum. Christian principles in the curriculum. Dorchester was the first town supported by a general tax on all property holders that ensured the population had good school buildings and that Christianity was part of what the children were exposed to. In 1690, the charge of the schoolmaster of New Haven was, quote, to commend his scholars and his labors amongst them unto God, to commend them unto God by prayer, morning and evening, taking care that his scholars in his school did reverently attend during the same, to examine them each Monday as to what they had learned from the Sunday service. The school used a textbook entitled, quote, now listen to this, this is what the public schools they had in 1690 in early America, in New Haven. They were using the textbook entitled The First Principles of the Oracles of God. That was a school textbook, The First Principles of the Oracles of God. Later, the Westminster Catechism was used. Also used was a text from England entitled, quote, now this is a long title. They gave some books long titles in years gone by. This is a title now, and this was used in the public schools. Listen to the title. The Humble Advance of the Assembly of Divines, now by authority of Parliament in England, concerning a shorter catechism. The catechism was a doctrinal statement from the Bible. Many more books were written for the towns in New England. The ties were strong between the civil authorities, the schools, and the teaching of the Bible to the children. The people felt there was a joint responsibility to support the colonial schools. This would strengthen the civil government of the colony and of the towns. The school textbooks guaranteed a, quote, form of expression, end quote, that was suitable for republican government, and that form of expression was Christianity. In Boston and Cambridge, there were what were called the Latin schools, schools that gave a classical education by which the children learned the basics of language by studying Latin literature. Can you imagine our kids say, can you imagine sending your kid off to school today? And I hope you enjoy your Latin class today. Why did they study Latin? Oh, that just sounds too big to me. I can imagine some parents out there running, oh, why should my junior study Latin? I don't know why he ought to study Latin. People don't know that Latin sharpened the pencil of the mind. It caused the students to think in another language. And Latin, 50% of your English language, almost 50% of your English language is from Latin. The other 50% is from Greek. I've had Latin and Greek in college and graduate school. And that's the basis of our American English language. In fact, of all English language. So that's why you'd want the kids to study Latin. It taught them the principles of grammar, as well as the origin of words. There's a reason that our ancestors were so smart to have their kids study Latin. There was a reason for it. And today, parents just don't know why. They're just too stupid to know why. Oh, brother. Oh, mercy. What a dumb people we have today. Out in the cold, do not understand what's going on, what's happening to our world. This education sharpened the mind of the students and accelerated the learning process. Latin was required in most schools up to around the 1920s. Latin is still being taught as an elective study in many school systems. I had my granddaughter, I said, you've got to take Latin. Well, she believed me. She took 3 years of Latin. Only a couple of kids in her class, because everybody else thought, this is stupid. It sharpened the pencil of her mind. There was a reason for it. That which is meant for good can come up and become destructive. No one would have dreamed that government-supported schools would be bad. And that's what's happened. Now follow this. It was good when, years ago and generations ago, the government or the people supported the public schools, and they supported the teaching of Christianity in the public schools. Now it's bad. It really is bad, honestly. If the government supports our schools, why? Because they're going to take Christianity out of our schools. They've already done it. They've already done it. What am I saying they're going to? It's already happened. It's already out. But if the system is evil, now follow my train of thought. If the government is good, it is good for the government to support the schools if they can tolerate, which they should, Christianity. But if the system of government is evil, it will destroy. And that's just what will happen with government-supported schools today. It is happening. It is happening. If Christianity is removed from the culture and from the society, the results will be harmful to the institutions. The government schools will become secularized and turn liberal, and they already have. They'll become the enemy of the Christian culture. This is exactly what happened, and it happened far more rapidly than could have been imagined. By the 1960s, the schools were turning away from Christian principles. I know. I graduated in 1956, and a few years later, I could see it coming. The American schools would no longer be what they were originally. What about building a Republican government? The schools were seen to have an agenda. The agenda was to build a Republican government and to put into the heart and soul of our young people Christianity. At first, the schools were the friends of the Christian society. For example, at the beginning, New York State owed much to DeWitt Clinton, and he lived in 1769 to 1828. Because of the proper ties he established between public schools and good government, Clinton was the mayor of New York and later became the governor of the state as well. He saw the clear and intrinsic connection between democracy and education, and he wrote this, listen to this, upon education, we must therefore rely for the purity, the preservation, and the perpetuation of republican government. The first duty of government and the surest evidence of good government is the encouragement of education. I consider, he wrote, the system of our common schools as the palladium of our freedom. For no reasonable apprehension can be entertained of its subservience as long as the great body of the people is enlightened by education. To Clinton, we're talking about to DeWitt Clinton. To DeWitt Clinton, the four R's were reading, writing, arithmetic, and religion, or Christianity. And by the way, the folks of 150 years ago, when they said religion, they did not mean the cults. They didn't mean the cults, and they did not mean the pagan religions of the world. They meant Christianity. If they said religion, they meant Christianity. No one argued with the fact that Christianity was to be taught in the schools, paid for by the taxes of the people. To cut out godly morality or even some of the basic theological principles of New Testament Christianity would have been unthinkable. No one had any objection to such teaching at this stage in the development of America. Why were people so open to teaching children biblical Christianity? Because of the Reformation in Europe. The population knew of the great value of the Reformation that impacted all of Europe. At this early period also, they knew of the blessings of Protestantism, and they realized what it meant to be born again spiritually. DeWitt Clinton was so narrow-minded, he was no narrow-minded bigot. He was a brilliant thinker and a blessing to the state of New York. He was the president of the Literary and Philosophical Society, the New York Historical Society, and the Presbyterian Education Society. Besides the four R's mentioned above, he wanted children to learn at their own level elements of geography, algebra, mineralogy, agriculture, chemistry, mechanical philosophy, surveying, geometry, astronomy, political economy, and ethics. He was no fool. He was no fool. Here was a Christian who said, we want Christianity, but we want also all these other great disciplines as well to be taught in our public schools. It would be a terrible mistake to look down at such men as Clinton. They were intellectuals who made America the bright and shining star of the nations at the time. He knew what education, Christian education, would do for the stability of the Republic. He knew. He knew. He understood what it needed, what this nation needed. Well, what about the death of the Bible in American public schools? This did not happen suddenly. In fact, in some parts of the nation, even today, the Bible can still be read and taught, and prayer can be given to open schools every morning. But in our modern times, the death of the Bible is just about complete. Secularism and evolution is winning in our culture. It's a common fact that early public schools gave large place to the teaching of Christianity. But this change following the Civil War, slowly the change began. Slowly. Notice I said slowly. Not instantly, but slowly. What effect the war had on this process needs to be studied more in order to understand the dynamic changes that took place. For certain, secularism took over in the school systems across the land. By the mid part of the 19th century, the teaching of Christianity was reduced to simply reading selected passages from the Bible. Sometimes the Lord's Prayer was mentioned and hymns were sung for special occasions, such as at Christmas. The reading of the Bible was somewhat continued, but with less and less emphasis. Some school systems were bombarded with lawsuits to stop the reading of Scripture. This author, me, who wrote this book that you're going to get, remembers prayer being said by the student council over the PA system in the 1950s in Dallas, Texas, at good old Woodrow Wilson High School. In the 1950s, over half of the students, now you ready for this? I only discovered this the other day because I picked up my old annual and looked at the seniors in my annual and found out that half of the students in my class in high school took Bible courses for credit. Half of them took Bible courses for credit without any objection by parents or other students. At the present time, there's almost no teaching of Christianity in our schools. It is doubtful that the practice of explaining the Word of God will ever return to our public institutions. Understanding government. What is government all about? One of the most popular books used in American schools was John Amos Comenius' book, The Visible World. Now, he lived from 1592 to 1670. Comenius was the bishop of the Moravian Church and one of the great educational reformers of all time. His work can be classified as a civics textbook that helped the new generation to understand how government works. Comenius argued that, quote, things, end quote, must be learned before words. Thus, his book insisted on pictures to help plant in the minds of children visual concepts to aid the learning of words. His was one of the first illustrated textbooks for schools that brought children along in thinking. His motto was this. By the way, his motto was in Latin. It was Orbis Sensualium Pictus. Orbis Sensualium Pictus. And that means a world of things obvious to the senses drawn in pictures. A world of things obvious in the senses drawn in pictures. What about good manners? Do they teach good manners in school? I've noticed that more and more the kids just say, yeah, and huh. And they say to adults, yeah. They don't say ma'am and yes, sir, and no, sir. They just go, yeah, yeah. They're taught that, hey, you're as good as the teacher. No, you're not. Students aren't as good as the teacher. The teacher is the one that is the better one, if you will. Good manners. In 1794, John Vinell's book, The School of Good Manners. Now, you ready for this? The School of Good Manners was a classic in Boston schools. Children were taught how to mind their manners as well as how to understand biblical truth from the Bible. Such a book today would more than likely be rejected in the average American school system. Many liberals will argue that such a school is intrusive and forces a sense of morals on the children, as if that is bad. Oh, we don't want to give our kids any morals, do we? Freedom is now out of control in America. We are to do nothing that would force children to do what is right. The reason? We are into what's called a postmodern world, in which there are no absolutes. In other words, there's no right or wrong. Manners are what you conceive them to be. We cannot tell the younger set how to live, how to relate, how to dress. Again, it must be remembered that good manners are to be brought into the home, to be practiced in relationships, and be carried out in civil government. There is to be order in government. Our government will not work. Ultimately, to do right and to live right is biblical. And what better source, of course, than the Bible? The connection to American government. If the schools were to be so teaching, what would be the result? If the schools were teaching good manners and teaching the Bible, what would be the result? Government that is based on morality functions properly. Benjamin Rush, and he lived in 1745 to 1813, sent a petition to the legislature of Pennsylvania that argued for the proper education of youth, but he saw the direct connection with Republican government and the learning process. And he wrote this. Listen to what Rush wrote. "I conceive the education of our youth in this country to be particularly necessary in Pennsylvania, while our citizens are composed of the natives of so many different kingdoms in Europe. Our schools of learning in America, by producing one general and uniform system of education, will render the mass of the people more homogeneous and therefore fit them more easily for a uniform and peaceable government." Fit them more easily for a uniform and peaceable government. The population realized that government would be blessed by what was happening in the public schools. It would be blessed. What about higher education and Christianity? The founders of the colonies realized the leadership of the new nation would need those trained in higher education. Leaders had to return to England early on to become university trained. Most subjects one could major in were theology, law, and rhetoric or grammar and logic. Many English universities were also offering courses in medicine. Such schools needed to be established in America, and the early schools in America were established for Christian purposes and Christian reasoning. That's the reason they were established. What about Harvard? 1636. The General Court of Massachusetts voted to establish a school or college needed for a free people. They voted for £400 to be set aside to start such an institution. 20 of the principal men of the colony, headed by John Winthrop, were the school's governors. A Puritan minister, John Harvard, gave £800 in his library as a gift to help start the college. The first graduation took place in 1643, and most men would be better trained in thinking than graduates of today. They had to give public disputations in Greek or Hebrew. In the first thesis, it was argued that the English language is second to none, and the arguments for the thesis were stated in Latin, and that was Harvard University. Boy, have we missed it. Have we lost it. Our time is gone. We're going to pick this up on our next broadcast. May the Lord bless you now the rest of this day. Real good.